From roughly 1200 CE to roughly 1400 CE, the Islamic world was under attack. By the year 1200, the Abbasid Caliphate had shrunk to a shadow of its former self, having survived under some overlords. Three crusades had struck the Middle East. The Reconquista had seen great success and was about to nearly bring Muslim existence on Iberia to an end. The Middle East was a mosaic of smaller sultanates and emirates that fought each other and paid lip service to the caliph back in Baghdad. This civilization was about to come under siege. This world was about to be trampled by Mongol horses. This video is sponsored by Magellan TV. Magellan TV is a streaming service that hosts over 3,000 documentaries and shows in various genres, from history to science, as well as travel and art. They're adding new shows all the time, which you can enjoy on all sorts of devices. Also, best of all, there are no ads, and an increasing percentage of shows is available in 4K with no additional cost. They were kind enough to offer Al-Muqaddimah viewers an extended free month-long trial. You can go to try.magellantv.com/Al-Muqaddimah to take advantage of that. Since you're watching a history channel, you might also like many historical documentaries that they have. I would recommend The Tomb of Genghis Khan. In this documentary, a team goes to the sacred mountains of Mongolia to find the tomb of the great conqueror we're talking about in this video. Since the day he died, people have been trying to find the final resting place of Genghis Khan, and this documentary shows the story of the people who were perhaps the closest ever to finding it. Secondly, I'd recommend First Emperor, the Man Who Made China. This is the story of Qin Shi Huangdi, the great Chinese emperor. His legacy includes the Great Wall and his astonishing tomb guarded by the famed Terracotta Army. This wonderful drama documentary offers unprecedented access to new excavation at major sites and, through major dramatic reconstruction, reveals the personality and motivations of this remarkable but still relatively unknown leader. Again, you can go to try.magellantv.com/Al-Muqaddimah to get a free month-long trial. It would also help support the channel. Back to the video. The Mongol invasions were a culmination of the dream of Genghis Khan's great-grandfather, Kabul Khan, who, according to the secret history of the Mongols, had done a great job of uniting the Mongol tribes. He became so powerful that the Chinese Jin Emperor invited him to Beijing in an attempt to win him over, but Kabul Khan instead got drunk and tweaked the emperor's beard, which wasn't exactly an equal reply to the gifts that the emperor had bestowed on the Khan. Khan, by the way, means chief or leader, and later came to mean king. The Khan was barely able to leave with his life, but his successor, Ambagai Khan, had to pay with his life for this insult. The Chinese emperor defeated him and crucified him on something called the wooden donkey. After him, Hatullah Khan, the son of Kabul Khan, was able to fight back and keep Mongol unity, but not for long. With his death in 1160, the Mongols broke apart and fell to their old ways of infighting. Hatullah Khan's nephew, Yusuge, dreamt of restoring unity and rebuilding the Mongols into a formidable force. Around the same time, he kidnapped the wife of a high-ranking member of the Merkits tribe. This was sort of a tradition among Mongols. The woman he abducted, Holun, became his wife, and not just his wife, but his chief wife, meaning that only her children could inherit. Now that he had a wife to produce heirs for him, he wanted to obtain more power. He allied with the Turkic Kerite tribe, whose chief, Toghril, he had once helped. Toghril and Yusuge became sworn brothers, sort of like BFFs but with more killing. With his help, Yusuge led a raiding mission into Manchuria. Manchuria was home to the Tatars, who were old rivals to the Mongols. During the campaign, he captured a senior Tatar named Temujin and brought him back with him. On return, he heard that his wife, Holun, was pregnant. The boy would be named after this captured foe, Temujin, meaning something like Iron Man, or more accurately, blacksmith. Sometime after, probably in 1162, young Temujin, heir to Yusuge of the Borjugin clan, was born, holding on to a clot of blood in his hands, an omen that the boy shall grow up to be a great warrior and a great leader. When the boy turned 8 or so, Yusuge started looking for a wife for him. He found a family from his wife's clan, the Ongirats. Their daughter, Borte, was around a year older than Temujin. The marriage was fixed, and Temujin was sent to live with the family in accordance with Mongol tradition. On the way back, Yusuge was apparently poisoned by some Tatars in revenge for his raiding a few years earlier. Yusuge returned home and then died. Just before he died, he summoned Temujin to return to his family. Temujin and his family now had to fend for themselves and survive in this harsh world where family ties meant everything. Unfortunately, his own family, his cousins, the descendants of his great-grandfather's brother Ambagai Khan, abandoned him. Temujin, his mother Holun, his stepmother Tsuchigil, and his 6 siblings had to find a way to feed and shelter themselves. This part of the secret history of the Mongols puts a lot of emphasis on family ties and the importance of women, as Holun, Temujin's mother, was probably the only reason that the family was able to survive, along with probably his stepmother, who doesn't get any credit in the secret history. While Mongol women weren't entirely equal to men, they were still remarkably trained and were able to survive on their own. There are 2 events from this period that are important to Temujin's story. First, his friendship with a boy named Jamukha. The two became blood brothers, or anda, and swore to fight by each other until the end. Temujin had his first ally. Second, there's a story about him and his brother. Around the age of 13 or so, Temujin and his brother Khasar had caught some fish which were stolen by their older half-brother Bektar. Temujin killed his half-brother in cold blood at the age of 13 over some fish. God damn it. Not long after that, there was a raid on the family's camp by some rivals who were hoping to kidnap and kill Temujin. Temujin escaped but was caught and imprisoned for a while. He was set to be executed when apparently someone in the enemy's camp saw him as being favored by the heavens and decided to help him escape. Being favored by the heavens is a recurring theme in the secret history, as Temujin again and again wonders early in his career if he's actually favored and then boasting about it after gaining some success. At the age of 16, Temujin went looking for Borte, the girl he was arranged to be married to. He found her family and decided to get married. At the wedding, Borte's family presented Temujin's mother with a black sable gown. Temujin knew that it was too beautiful to just be worn by his mother. After having married Borte, Temujin went looking to expand his power, just as his father had. He already had 2 blood brothers, Jamukha and another boy he'd met named Borchu. He also had the support of the Ongirad clan, the clan his mother and his wife were born into. He now needed more allies. He went to his father's sworn brother, Togril, the leader of the Kherite tribe. He presented him with the black sable gown from his wedding. In return for the gown, the Turkic chief promised to bring together for him his divided people. It was just in time, because soon after this, Temujin would need all the friends he could find. The Merkits, the people from whom Temujin's father had stolen his mother, were back. They attacked the family's camp at dawn, catching them by surprise. Almost everyone was able to flee, except for one person who didn't have a horse. That person was Lady Borte. Temujin himself was barely able to keep his life and escape to the mountains. He re-emerged after hiding for 3 days. He had only one mission, to get his beloved Borte back. If Temujin just accepted her loss, he would have been branded a coward, and so he could only fight till he got her back or died in battle. Temujin called on every favor from every friend he had and was able to muster up a force of 12,000. Temujin was able to find the Merkits camped along the Selenga River, though while crossing the river, the Merkits were made aware of the attack and fled. Temujin chased after them with a sword in hand, yelling out for Borte. Borte heard him and escaped from the cart she was being taken away on. The 2 young lovers ran towards each other, falling into each other's arms. Temujin called off the chase, for he had found what he came looking for. Around 9 months after this, Borte gave birth to Jochi, her firstborn. Temujin accepted the boy as his own, but other members of the family stigmatized him for possibly being the illegitimate son of Borte's kidnapper. After the campaign against the Merkits, the alliance between Jamukha and Temujin started to fall apart. Jamukha was more influential and wanted Temujin to be subservient to him. Temujin wasn't willing to do that, so he left Jamukha's family and went away with his. Here, the secret history again returns to the idea of favored by heaven. It tells us that many people saw that Temujin was favored by heaven and so joined him, abandoning Jamukha. At this point, Temujin starts thinking of himself as a real leader. Probably in 1189 or so, perhaps in a private ceremony, Temujin's followers bestowed upon him the title of Genghis Khan, meaning fierce leader. This was in response to Jamukha's Gurkhan, meaning universal leader. The date and the location of this ceremony are disputed, but 1189 near the Blue Lake seems to be a reasonable estimate. Genghis Khan was now a tribal chief whose mere existence was an act of war against all other tribes of the region. From 1190 to 1206, there's various things that happened, but their dates or even chronology aren't confirmed. We know that in 1202, according to Chinese sources, Toghril and Genghis attacked the Tatars and destroyed them, killing every male taller than the linchpin of a cart, so basically everyone but the smallest children. This was supported by the Jin, but then, probably shortly after, their alliance fell apart. These years are marked by his rivalry against Jamukha and his rise to power. During a battle with Jamukha, he almost lost his life twice. First, when an arrow almost killed him, but hit his horse instead. Second, he was hit by an arrow dipped in poison, which put him on bed for a few days with his life hanging in balance. Though his forces were able to win the battle. After the battle, he found the man who had shot him. Impressed by his skill and honesty, he invited him to join him. This man was named Jebe, meaning arrow point, by Genghis and would become one of his most trusted commanders. Though it seems that these years were full of fortune and misery. One story tells of his fortune and successes, while another mentions his losses. One such loss came in 1203 when he was defeated and had to retreat with only 2600 men to a river or lake called Baljuna. It seems Toghril had abandoned Genghis as well and had joined Jamukha. With no food and only muddy water to drink, this was indeed one of the lowest points in Genghis' life. He endured these hardships along with his 19 loyal commanders who came to be known as the Baljunans. The remarkable thing about this entire ordeal is the diversity of the 19 Baljunans. There were 3 Christians, 1 shamanist, 2 Buddhists, and 3 Muslims among them, one of whom was a descendant of the Prophet Muhammad. When Genghis was going through all this, the alliance between Jamukha and Toghril came and went. In 1204, Genghis attacked and defeated Toghril. Toghril and his son fled to a neighboring tribe. There, Toghril was killed by a guard who refused to believe that this refugee was the Khan of the Karaites. One enemy was gone, it was now time for Jamukha. Jamukha was taking shelter with the Naiman tribe, who were vastly superior in numbers. Genghis camped near them and had every man light 5 fires, giving the appearance of a much, much larger army. By this time, Genghis's generals Jebe, Jelme, Subudai, and Kublai had amassed a reputation for their efficiency and brutality. The Naiman chief was scared, leading to Jamukha fleeing. Jamukha went to take shelter with the Merkits, the old enemies of Genghis who had kidnapped his wife some 20 years earlier. Genghis chased him. He defeated the Merkits and captured Jamukha. Jamukha, according to the secret history, was repentant and asked for death in return for all the sins he had committed, though this might not be completely true. Genghis Khan had now defeated his enemies along with some fairly powerful tribes of his region. He had gained a reputation as a great leader and the respect that came along with it. In 1206, probably on the bank of the river Onun, where he was probably born, Genghis Khan called on a Kurultai, an assembly of all the Mongol tribes. He was elected the Khagan of the Mongols, something like an emperor. He had united all the Mongol tribes under his command, just like his ancestors, but unlike his ancestors, he was going to bring some hefty reforms to their way of life. He commissioned a prisoner of his to develop a script for Mongolian so that they could write and keep records for administrative purposes. Additionally, they created something of a law canon, which is popularly known as the Great Yasa. He turned the tribes into regiments, which had people divided up not by family ties, but by merit and loyalty. He even created some corps, especially made up of the sons of the commanders of other corps, to ensure that if a commander wanted to betray him, his son would be a hostage. While tribal identities remained, most Mongol tribes were reorganized, superseding blood relations. This shiny new army needed to eat, and without Chinggis providing them with gold, they would have returned to their old way of raiding each other. So Chinggis looked to the settled peoples for a source of wealth. He looked just beyond the Gobi Desert. China was being ruled by three different powers: the Jin, the Song, and the Western Xia. The first target were the Western Xia, though it wasn't with an imperial ambition. Rather, there was only one goal: loot. The Western Xia, not to be confused by the Xia who lived almost 3,000 years earlier as the first dynasty of China, were weaker than the Jin and would certainly have been absorbed by them if not for the Mongols. In spring 1209, Chinggis Khan invaded. The first city that he attacked was also the first city that they ever attacked, the modern-day city of Jinshuan. They struggled there but were experimenting with different things. For example, they broke the dikes of the Yellow River to flood the city and force the people to surrender. Though this wasn't successful, and the Mongols ended up flooding their own camps. The city also grew hungry, and so they struck an agreement with Chinggis, compliance in return for peace. The Western Xia were now tributaries of the Great Khan. 2 years after this, in 1211, he led 100,000 men with some 200,000 to 300,000 horses to attack the Jin. From 1211 to 1214, he led a campaign into China almost every single year. He finally brought Beijing to its knees in the spring of that year. The emperor sued for peace and the Mongols returned after taking immense amounts of loot. The emperor thought that he should move his capital across the Yellow River to Kaifeng in order to protect himself from the northern barbarians. This proved a bold move because Chinggis saw it as a violation of their agreement, and so by September 1214, the Mongols were back in Jin territory. They once again surrounded Beijing, and this time the city was able to do even less than it had the previous time. In June 1215, the city opened its gates. It was sacked and its population was slaughtered. According to one source, the soil of the city remained greasy for months with human fat. Chinggis wanted to move further and take Kaifeng, but matters on the western edge of the empire demanded attention. The crescent of the desert was about to face the eagle of the steppes. See you next time. Don't forget to subscribe and press the bell icon. On screen right now, you can see the names and tiers of the patrons. You can join them by pledging a dollar or more to support the channel. Thank you for watching.